Welcome to the Week 12 edition of the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hankst, AFC North lead writer at BleacherReport.com, pro football focus, fantasy football contributor, and all-around football-loving person. I'm joined by my co-host, Brian.
Hello, Andrea.
Brian is also a football-loving person.
I am.
That's why we do this podcast.
We do.
That's part of it. So as I said, it is Week 12. In the National Football League in the 2014 season.
Man.
Slowly but surely, this season is dawning to a close.
I don't even know if slowly is a good word.
Quickly.
It's rapidly approaching.
We're rapidly approaching the end of the season. Obviously, we're in the middle of the month of November when teams start separating themselves into playoff contenders. It's a wonderful time of the year. And we'll get into our Week 12 picks later on in the show. But first, it's a big week of news regarding running backs in the National Football League.
Always good topic.
Starting in the AFC North, not only did Le'Veon Bell become what is actually the second running back to rush for 200 yards this season, because a stat correction had...
Jonas Gray
eclipsed that in the Patriots game, 201 yards. Le'Veon Bell, he had over 200 rushing yards.
That's crazy that there wasn't a 200-yard back until, or 200-yard game by any back until this week.
And then there were
two. And then it was consecutive night games.
Yes. So that's definitely entertaining. So Le'Veon Bell, he was basically the focus of the Pittsburgh Steelers offense, especially in the second half of their win against the Tennessee Titans. And his friend and fellow Steelers running back, LeGarrette Blount, not too happy about that. LeGarrette Blount reportedly left the Steelers sideline before the game had even ended, went back to the locker room, got changed, and was planning to leave the stadium until linebackers coach Joey Porter was able to get him back. He was released on Tuesday. You can't walk out and quit the team like that and have these guys trust you and have your back and all of that. So he was released.
Especially when you're a marginal player like that anyway, like he's been.
Yeah, I mean, he's been pretty marginal. Of course, obviously, you know, the Steelers don't have a lot of running backs. So he was a major player. What I just don't understand is why he would be so frustrated, because you sit there and you see this game and you see a guy who you're very close friends with, and Le'Veon Bell, obviously having success, and they're not going to steer away from that. And it's just something he should be aware of as a running back in the National Football League. But for whatever reason, he grew disgruntled, walked out on the team, so they had to let him go. Another guy who's been kind of disgruntled as of late, Ben Tate of the Cleveland Browns. He'd been complaining a little bit as of late, about his share of the playing time with Terrence West and Isaiah Crowell, the two rookies kind of stepping up this year. You know, he said back in the summer that he wasn't afraid of competition from these guys, that he knows what he's capable of and he'll be the starting back. But that ended up not being the case as the season wore on for the Browns and Tate.
I think he was under a different assumption at the time.
He was under a different assumption. And he was also released on Tuesday. I would say it's less for locker room reasons, because a lot of the guys were asked about it afterwards and they said that there was no real problem with Tate. But he becomes expendable when you have these two rookie backs that are running well, and the Browns have a lot of defensive injuries right now. Especially after Sunday. Last week, Phil Taylor was placed on IR. Armani Bryant had already been on IR. John Hughes can't come back until week 17. Carlos Dansby and Jabal Sheard were both hurt last week. Dansby thinks he can play this week. It's a homecoming game for him. He has an MCL sprain. He's going to try to go, and he's going to see what he can do to go. Jabal Sheard, good news on his front. He got a second opinion, and it doesn't look like he's going to need surgery. And the foot injury that he suffered, initially thought to be potentially season-threatening, looks like it might only hold him out for one more game. So that's really good news. But even before those two guys went out last week, the Browns were really thin when it comes to their defensive depth at the front seven. So you put all these things together, and it makes sense that that Tate was released. Tate was picked up. He didn't last on the waiver wire for long. He is now with the Minnesota Vikings. Of course, Adrian Peterson given a indefinite suspension by NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell earlier this week. appeal pending, of course. But not only do the Vikings not have Peterson, Matt Asiata has a concussion. He's in the protocol, may not be able to play this week. Jerick McKinnon also out of practice today with a back injury. So clearly the Vikings were, you know, pretty hard up for a running back. So it makes sense that they would go with Ben Tate. LeGarrette Blount, he might not get picked up by a team for the remainder of this season because it's just not a good look when you quit your team, when you walk out on your team.
Yeah, well, I mean, he wasn't – last time he was a free agent before he came to Steelers, before the last season, before the 13 season. You know, it's not like he was this the prime acquisition on the waiver wire.
No,
at the time.
No. He's
not
very,
a lot of people were seeking him. Basically.
He's a very specific skill set. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a short yardage back. You can use him at the goal line. You don't really want to throw passes to him. The Steelers tried a few times this season. Never looked really that good. You know, his blocking is a little, leaves you wanting, especially when you have a quick study like Le'Veon Bell, who from year one to year two is just a completely different beast right now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, you put all those things together, obviously, you know, LeGarrette Blount had some character related red flags coming into the NFL, and then of course he and Bell were arrested for marijuana over the summer. So I would not be surprised if no other team picks up now free agent LeGarrette Blount. Well,
I mean, he'll wait in the wings. I mean, it's another thing that could change depending on, like, you know, injuries that, you know, future injuries as they happen.
Sure, of course.
You know, maybe somebody will get more desperate or just their needs change as
playoffs approach, get some depth in there maybe,
yeah,
or whatever.
Exactly. So he could get picked up, but I'd say, like,
I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't. Ultimately.
I certainly wouldn't be surprised if he didn't.
It's not a good look to walk out on your team like
oh,
that.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all.
Especially when you're frustrated and jealous of your close friend who's having a really good game. He should be out there excited that the Steelers came back from such a huge point deficit, you know, on the road in prime time, and you know, their playoff hopes are still alive. And
well, and
you know what I mean.
And Le'Veon Bell was killing it.
He was killing it.
There's
no reason to take him out and put LeGarrette Blount in.
They had no answer for Le'Veon Bell, no. And what the team needed once they got that last lead established. You know, all they needed to do was run the clock out and just keep pounding the ball, and it was working all night. Why go away from that?
Sure.
And so the question is, why are you not, especially with what, you know, the Steelers have gone through this season and, you know, losing some bad games and not basically being questioned by a lot of people based on some of their performances against lesser teams this year. And here they are, you know, especially when the game was in peril for a while and they took over at the end, and then he's going to be, you know, he should be happy the team is, you know, going to get this win,
right?
Assuming they can keep the ball and run the clock out and all that, and that's what his boy Le'Veon Bell was doing out
right
there. And so then he gets real selfish, and I mean, I get it, he's frustrated,
but you don't walk out on your
team. Yeah,
if you want to keep playing football, then you can't walk out on your team, because immediately you have lost the trust of all of your teammates. It's over.
And then you have a reputation once you're out there available for other teams to pick
up. Absolutely. And
so
LeGarrette Blount's already a guy with a negative reputation. So, you know, you compound it with this, with what he did on Monday night, and he's gonna be a, you know, proceed with caution, high risk kind of guy.
Absolutely.
Know, for whatever team picks him up, whether this year or next year or whatever.
I mean,
obviously,
I'd say if another team picks it
yeah
up this year or next year.
Obviously, we did, you know, briefly touch on the Adrian Peterson thing. Again, suspended indefinitely for no pay for the rest of the year. He's got an early December appeal filed by the NFLPA. D. Smith, the head of the NFLPA, basically has accused Roger Goodell of, quote, making it up as they go along, Roger Goodell and the NFL, that is. When it comes to this. You know, yet another kind of public relations maneuver here that they pulled with this Adrian Peterson thing. Basically, another thing that the NFLPA is frustrated about, first off, it's an indefinite suspension based on the personal conduct policy. He pled guilty to a misdemeanor. Normally, if you plead guilty to a misdemeanor, you're not going to get this indefinite suspension based on personal conduct policy, especially not someone who's never been in trouble before. But because of the nature of Peterson's crime, and the fact that the Goodell and the NFL need to do some public relations work here. He's got this indefinite suspension. But initially, after he had pled guilty to the misdemeanor, the NFL Players Association, they filed a grievance with the National Football League because he wasn't reinstated or at least taken off of that special commissioner's exempt list after the fact. And so they wanted to have a disciplinary hearing for Peterson, but he's still on the – he would still have been on that exempt list. So the NFLPA filed a grievance, and just hours before the arbitrator was going to rule on that grievance, Goodell announced the suspension. So there's, you know, there's a lot of push and pull here between the NFLPA and Goodell and the league. But what it all boils down to is how much power the NFL and the commissioner have and had during those CBA negotiations a couple of years back. They basically got everything they wanted. They could take whatever they wanted away in terms of discipline and all of that, and you know, take some power away from the union. So basically, you know, the players would basically were kind of forced to sign away their rights when it comes to dealing with punishment, appeals, things like that. That's why the Pittsburgh Steelers collectively as a team were the only team to not approve the CBA. They're a team that felt that they were always being unfairly targeted by discipline from Goodell, and did not like him having that much singular control over this whole process. And this is another example of how that plays out in baffling ways that causes D. Smith to correctly believe it just seems like they're making it up as they go along.
Yeah, it's not by that's not by accident, you know.
It's not by accident. It's about consolidating that power.
Right, and that's the thing is what they wanted.
And having the players right where they want them, because it's all about the money, and that's what rules the day, and they can
keeping
crush
things
the
loose
players
enough
as much
so
as
you
they
can,
want.
It's keeping things loose enough so that way you can kind of adjust as you go and not necessarily rule as evenly as the union would like.
Yes. So now we have a guy who's pled guilty to a misdemeanor, but because of what that misdemeanor was, he's getting the indefinite suspension. So again, the arbitrary nature of Goodell's disciplinary powers rearing their head again. And we still have yet to hear about the Ray Rice investigation and all of that. So that's something that's going to be coming out at some point, probably, you know, by the end of the month. I would assume that if it's damning towards the NFL, it's coming out the Friday after Thanksgiving. Guaranteed. If it makes the NFL or Roger Goodell look bad, it is coming out the Friday after Thanksgiving.
If there's a press conference or any sort of statement like that, they should have it playing in the Best Buys throughout the
the
country.
Everybody's
going to be at the store. So,
and then there's one more additional piece of running back news. Marshawn Lynch, Seattle Seahawks running back Marshawn Lynch. He's known for not being very cooperative with the media. The Pro Football Writers Association has often had to kind of, you know, nudge both the NFL, who fines players for not speaking where they're supposed to speak to the media, it's a requirement of the job, nudging the league, nudging teams to try to get some availability. Well, Marshawn Lynch, he didn't really like to do a lot of talking before the Super Bowl last year. A lot of complaints about that from members of the Writers Association, and now he decided not to talk to reporters after his Week 11 game, and he also did not go to the locker room at halftime in order to avoid everybody. This has cost him $100,000.
Wow.
For not talking to reporters again and not going to the locker room at halftime. Now, I understand how silly it is, and people give a lot of flack to members of the Pro Football Writers, of which I'm a member, for, you know, the ones especially who are very vocal about wanting to get access to these players. But that's the point of the PFWA. The point is about getting access to players in the ways that the league mandates they must give access. And so it's frustrating because the media aspect of being a football player, especially a high-profile one like a starting running back like Marshawn Lynch, part of that job is the media. Part of your job isn't just football. Part of it is also you're required to speak to the media. So while this seems kind of silly, and sure, there are other people you can talk to, and also since he doesn't want to talk to the media, it's not like Marshawn Lynch is going to say anything of use during the amount of time that he's got to be be in front of them and everything. But, you know, you got to do your job. You're going to get fined if you don't. And while it seems silly, I mean, I completely understand why it is, because if he thinks that he is some sort of exception to the rule, then you're going to have other players trying to be exceptions to the rule, and then you're just going to go back to fighting this battle for access that should have already been fought and won. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's honestly, this is one of the tougher things for me to even consider, just because...
I mean, I have very little to no access to players, so this thing doesn't really even affect me in my job personally, but I totally understand why it exists.
It trickles down to you, because who they're talking to is beat writers, and the beat writers is where so many other people get their information
from.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, mm-hmm. Obviously, it affects the entire media situation. I struggle with this, because you're right in that, you know, if you make an exception for him, then how far spread is that going to get? You know,
sure.
Where do you make other exceptions, or how do you deal with people?
Right,
because
then all of a sudden you don't have Dez Bryant or somebody not speaking in the media, and then you have like, you know, and it just keep every team will have these guys that don't want to do
right.
it, and
but
just because they had a bad game.
It's not just that. The sympathy I have for the players in this situation is. You're right, it is part of the job, but, you know, they are football players, you know what I mean? They're not orators.
And they often get asked the same questions.
They often get asked the same questions. It's kind of farcical, the whole post-game interview stuff anyway, because, you know, there's, you know, what everybody likes to, you know, casually refer to as coach speak is something that the coaches say, obviously, and it certainly works for it's certainly the same sort of thing for the players, in that they just kind of have these non-answers,
yeah,
and they
we
talk
do,
about,
we do, we do.
Oh, we're the
team,
and it's all about the team and blah, blah, you know, it just seems kind of pointless. And my main thought on this is just like, you know, everybody's different. Everybody has different,
levels of comfort with speaking to the media.
Exactly. It's just not even the media, just in general, like everybody has different comfort levels with anything in life. Some people are more comfortable speaking into a microphone in front of a group of people. Other people have anxiety about it. And if Marshawn Lynch is a guy that just isn't comfortable being at a podium,
sure.
And he never will be, it just seems kind of lame that one, he's forced to do it, and two, if he tries to get out of it, they're going to fine him $100,000. $100,000.
That's because he's been fined before.
I know it's the right. It's the increased fine for repeat offense, whatever. But it's just, you know, like I said, I struggle with the issue because
is there anything that he would have said to any reporter that's worth $100,000?
No.
You know what I mean?
But was it worth it $100,000 for him to not go up there and not say anything? Probably not, you know, but.
Yeah, he's not going to be making money forever.
He's not going to make
NFL cash.
Exactly.
Forever.
And that's these guys, they get paid lots of money. And part of what they get paid lots of money for is to get in front of a mic and not really say anything at the end of a game. But, I don't know. It's they certainly don't make as much as the owners, and I would venture to guess that Roger Goodell has a lot more money than most of the NFL players.
Oh, I would say he has a lot more money than all of the NFL players.
So then they just keep taking money out of these guys' hands for trivial things, you know, like you know. Again, I get the reasons
things
why.
Things that you perceive as trivial,
but it is, you know. So he didn't, after the game, didn't get in front of a mic and say what?
That sucked.
Oh, that was, you know, that was
like there.
That wasn't a good game. How did you feel? Well, it didn't feel good. We lost, you know.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I understand both sides of the issue, and it's a tough one for me to just sit there and I have a hard time sitting there arguing on either side, really.
Sure.
Just because, like, I see both sides, and I get every reason why they're supposed to do this stuff, but does it seem right that he's going to get hit for $100,000 because he didn't feel like talking to the people?
Right. No, it's both sides. I mean, I understand that they want to have some sort of.
I kind of feel like if they should maybe the first offense it's X amount, second offense and third offense it's X or Y or whatever, but then there should be a cap on it at some point. There's no reason that it should cost more than. If Marshawn Lynch wants to opt out of the post-game interview process, and he accepts a $5,000 fine for it. He just says, you know what, it's $5,000. I'm just not gonna do it. If they leave, if it's something like that, you know, I guess I could kind of get that a little bit more than just, you know, he doesn't do it, and then whatever time goes by, and then they say, okay, that's $100,000. You know what I mean? It seems like a punishment doesn't fit the crime to me.
It is a very expensive punishment, that's for sure. But you know, there's the two sides. There's so the NFL, you know, the pro football writers worked really hard to try to get mandatory
access.
I get that
part, and that's a hard job. It's a hard job.
Oh, it's
right.
Beat reporters is a very
difficult
job.
You need some quotes from these guys, something to overanalyze.
You're writing about the same team every day. Like you
right.
need stuff.
You need stuff for your articles. I get all that. Yeah, it's just. I don't know. It just seems more like the to me it seems more than anything like they're just again hitting these players up for more cash when they have a good amount of money, but it's not even close to what the rest of these guys have.
Right. And finally, in case you didn't know, it's been snowing at Ralph Wilson Stadium, just outside of the city limits of Buffalo, New York. Just been snowing a little bit. There's currently 4 feet of snow on the ground at Ralph Wilson Stadium, and there's projected to be 2 to 3, maybe even 4 additional feet between now and their game against the New York Jets on Sunday. Right now, they are paying fans $10 an hour, plus giving them a ticket to the game to help shovel. The Bills are still confident that they will be able to have their game in the scheduled time and the scheduled location on Sunday, but there are contingency plans being put into place, perhaps going to their Toronto stadium where they play every year and playing there, or moving the date of the game, perhaps having a doubleheader on Monday night. I just got to say, I've been looking at the pictures, and that's an incredible amount of snow. It's just the most incredible, like, lake effect snow situation happening there right now. I think if they can get that snow cleared out and they can play a game there, it's going to be some on Sunday as scheduled. It's going to be a football miracle.
I think it'd be a cool thing to watch.
I think it'd be really cool to see just the, like, what do they do with these walls of snow?
Snowball with just bunkers of snow all around the field and the fans will be like carving out of the snow just so they can see.
Yeah, they can put like the benches, the players' benches on top of the big snow banks and just have like stairs leading up to them.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
So that's going to be quite interesting. It's the worst it's the snowiest, obviously, stadium in the NFL. In fact, the location in Orchard Park was selected because it gets so many heavy lake effect snow bands in the winter, compared to in Buffalo proper, which is, you know, just like a couple miles away, that they got a discount on the land because it's just so snowy and crappy there all the time. So that's why the stadium is there, because it was discounted land because it's so snowy. So obviously it's the snowiest stadium in the NFL, mm-hmm. but this is above and beyond.
Yeah. Well, we've seen anything
like this. And it's November.
Like this. Yeah.
You know, like they can handle this kind of snow because usually you get these like severe lake effect situations December, January, February when no one's playing football.
Yeah, rarely does this come up when it's
Winter proper.
Week 12.
Yeah, or when it's properly actually winter.
Yeah, right.
So I'm really curious to see what ends up happening. I really hope that they can get that place shoveled out. I just want to see what Ralph Wilson Stadium will look like after they try to remove. Right now, I think it's about 22,000 tons of snow, and it's about to double. So,
wow. When is the next wave coming in?
The next couple of days.
So over the next couple of days.
Yeah,
okay.
I think so. I wasn't sure, but there's going to be 2 to 4 additional feet between now and when the game is played on Sunday.
Oh my God.
Meanwhile, here in Chicago, it's been brutally cold and just kind of flurrying.
Yeah, I think we set a record.
Record low yesterday?
No, record. I
record
believe,
high low?
Record of, or not even consecutive, it's record of number of days below freezing in November.
Yeah.
That's what we're dealing with.
Yeah, it's been really, truly very pleasant. Honestly, I don't know. I might take 4 feet of snow. If those 4 feet of snow are falling and it's like 32 degrees outside,
31
degrees outside, then it being like yesterday and Monday here in Chicago with high temperatures of, you know, 12.
Well, there's something kind of fun. There's something kind of fun, even though it's a pain in the ass. There's something kind of fun about a blizzard.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just one of those things. It's like, oh, my God.
Look at this extreme weather.
Yeah, and, like, everybody deals with it that you come into contact with in your day-to-day that's around town or whatever. Everybody's fighting through this, and it's like, oh, man, what was your crazy experience with the blizzard? You know, and everybody's got a story to share with each other, and it's kind of a bonding thing.
We've got no crazy stories about the cold, except, you know what? It's cold. It's, like, so cold.
It's like back in, what was it, 2011 here in Chicago at the beginning of February, there was that giant blizzard.
There's a giant blizzard.
And everybody loves to, even today, to talk about, oh, man, you remember that a couple years ago?
Blowing sideways. Remember that blizzard? Thunder snow. So, yeah, you know, obviously, it's not going to be fun to dig out of 8 feet of snow, and I've never been in a situation where that much. I think I've only been in a 4 foot snow situation just once, and that's when I was in college in Massachusetts. I think I've dealt with 2-3 feet, but I've never dealt with 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That is beyond my comprehension of exactly what that looks
never
like.
Never been there, but so, I just hope that the Bills, when they give tickets to these people that are coming to help shovel the snow, I hope that they're seats that have seat backs, just because their backs are going to be killing them after shoveling all that snow.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot of snow. So, and then it's the matter of these fans getting out of their place where they've been shoveling nonstop
to go to
Ralph Wilson to shovel nonstop. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. I'm rooting for this game to stay on schedule, but we'll see. Oh, another thing to keep in mind, Josh Gordon is back for the Cleveland Browns this week. We'll discuss more about his return and his impact on the Browns in Week 12 when we come back from this break here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, because then we're going to have our Minute Picks.
Minute Picks.
So stay tuned. We'll be right back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. Back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and it is time for Week 12 Minute Picks.
Minute Picks.
Of course, that means that we get to be correct. You know what? Before I go any further, I'm glad that we had our bye week last week, because my picks were atrocious.
You don't want to, like, overly stake claim to
them. Yeah, we all of us lead writers, NFL and divisional lead writers at Bleacher Report, we all had a bad week of picks. It was a weird week of games. Hopefully that won't reoccur this week, especially now that I am committing these picks not only to digital paper but to digital ear noise as well. Sound? Ear noise.
You know, the old ear noise.
What do the kids call it? Ear noise? Oh, right, sound. So let's start up with Thursday Night Football. It's a divisional matchup, as it most often is. Kansas City Chiefs at the Oakland Raiders. I'm going with the Chiefs here because the Chiefs are the superior team. The only reason that Oakland, you know, I could see Oakland pulling this one out. You know, Derek Carr is getting a little bit more comfortable. They might be dealing with a younger running back this time, Latavius Murray. So maybe, you know, they're the home team. They don't have to travel. It's Thursday. So Latavius Murray. I don't know if I said that right. But you know, the Chiefs are a really good team, and I'm going to go with the good team instead of the home team or the creepy, like, scary Thursday night, anything can happen team. So I'm going to go with the Chiefs.
I'm going to call the upset.
All right.
You
aren't the only one.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Well, basically, I think that I'm gonna. I'll just say that I think Oakland's been playing okay over the last few games. Not great by any stretch, but this is their Super Bowl. This is their playoff game. This is when they're in the spotlight this year. I mean, I'm not checking the schedule. I don't think they have any other night games. But it's a divisional opponent at home, under the lights. This is as close as they're going to get as a marquee matchup situation. And I think that they're going to – I don't know. I'm just going to call the upset. I'm going to say that the 2008 Detroit Lions will be popping the champagne.
Next up, we got the Cleveland Browns at Atlanta Falcons on Sunday. Cleveland disappointed in their loss last week home against the Houston Texans. Definitely not the performance anybody was hoping for or most people expected. I think they're going to struggle in Atlanta, to be honest. I could see how the Browns could win because Atlanta's been, you know, pretty bad this year. Josh Gordon, of course, returns from his suspension this week, and that's going to be a huge amount of trouble for the Atlanta secondary. But I just don't trust the Browns. They're still trying to learn how to win on the road. I'd be more convinced about the Browns on the road if they do win this game, and I'll feel better moving forward. But for right now, I don't feel too great about the Browns on the road against the Falcons.
All right, two games, two disagreements here, because I'm going with the Browns.
All right.
And this is partly because I still don't believe in any team from the NFC South, and this is partly because Josh Gordon's coming back. I'm a little nervous because Cleveland lost some guys on defense last week. I'm not sure exactly how that's going to turn out. But I'm underwhelmed by Atlanta and every the other team in that division, and the Browns are going to go in there. Nobody's expecting much out of them. And I think that Gordon's the kind of boost that offense needs, and Hoyer needs, certainly. So.
My highly competitive AFC North division says, I hope that's true. I'm picking Atlanta, but it would keep things continue to stay interesting in the AFC North if Cleveland wins.
Yeah, very much so.
Next up, Tennessee Titans at the Philadelphia Eagles. Tennessee gave the Steelers a bit of a scare on Monday night because the Steelers, of course, were also doing that playing poorly against poor teams
doing
that they should
beat. Doing that Steeler thing they do?
It's not going to be as easy for the Tennessee Titans to do something scary against another Pennsylvania team because they're going to Philly to take on the Eagles. And I really like the Philadelphia Eagles right now. You know, obviously Sanchez, you know, he had a bad game last week, but I think that he can bounce back nicely against this Titans team. The only question is, you know, the Titans like to blitz, just got to keep them protected, but they could probably run that ball down their throats, much like the Steelers did. So I'm going to go with the Eagles.
Yeah, this is hard to see for the Titans at this point. You know, the Eagles coming off a loss, up in Green Bay and or a pretty bad loss too, and trying to keep their thing together, and coming home, Tennessee's a good matchup for Philadelphia, I think, as far as trying to get things back on the right track here, especially if they can get that running game going, which has been steadily improving as the season goes on, and the offensive line has been getting healthier, and then going against this Tennessee running defense that just kind of was Swiss cheese for Le'Veon Bell the other night.
Yeah, just got to smash it into them. That's all it takes.
And that's I think that that's going to be too strong for Tennessee.
Next up, we got the Detroit Lions at the New England Patriots. This should be a very interesting game. You know, you got a fully healthy Calvin Johnson right now. Reggie Bush is expected back. So this might be the toughest version of the Lions that the Patriots could face. However, I'm still not convinced that the Lions can go into Foxborough and beat these Patriots right now. The Patriots are kind of on fire. It's firing on all cylinders. They've got this young running back who's looked really good, at least for 1 week. I don't think he's going to run so well against the top-ranked run defense that the Lions have, but I think that there are other ways that the Patriots can get this win. Bill Belichick's not an idiot, so I'm going to go with the Patriots.
Yeah, a lot of people were on the Lions last week. I didn't buy it. I thought that I was hoping they'd play a good close game, which they did.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Arizona prevailed, and I'm kind of seeing this in the same sort of thing, where I'm hoping they go and give New England a game. As a fan, obviously, I'm hoping they go and give New England a game, but I'm not expecting them to be able to pull it out in Foxborough.
Next, we have Green Bay Packers at the Minnesota Vikings. Talk about a team that you can't stop right now. Green Bay and that offense, even more so than the New England offense at this moment, is just really going strong. You know, right now Aaron Rodgers is just playing out of his mind football. You know, I think that Minnesota has a chance to you know, keep Rodgers from, let's say, scoring 6 or 7 touchdowns in this game, but they don't have what it takes to win it, especially with newly minted starting running back, probably, Ben Tate. You got to go with the Packers here.
I don't know, man. I think the Vikings could give them a run. And I know that I'm only saying that just because I like a lot of what I've seen out of this Vikings team, even though they've obviously had some...
You can tell they're coached by Mike Zimmer.
I like the Zimmer coach team. I think they maybe had some... There were some missteps last week here in Chicago, and maybe some of that was him. I don't know. But I don't know. With Ben Tate in the mix now, I think that potentially he could run on this Packer team, that Packer defense a little bit, and... But probably not. I don't think I'm going to pull the trigger and call the upset. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Vikings gave him a scare, or at least kept it close than a lot of people think.
All right. Next up, Jacksonville Jaguars are at the Indianapolis Colts. There's not much to say here on my end. I really think the Indianapolis Colts are just going to win this game. You know, it is a little touch and go right now at the running back position. Ahmad Bradshaw on injured reserve with a broken ankle, which is a bummer because he was on pace to break the single season receiving touchdown record for a running back. So I'm kind of bummed about that. I guess we really get to see what Trent Richardson is made of, but I'm almost certain that I know what that is, and it is not a rolling ball of butcher knives, except if by that it means it gets stuck in the ground if you roll it around too much. I got to go with Indy here. Though I will say this much. Jacksonville could do some damage running on the ground with Denard. Running at that Indy defense is how to beat them. So I'll leave it with that too.
Well, I've not been shy about all right, well. Throughout the season I've been pretty up on the Jaguars. I've probably been overly optimistic about the Jaguars this year. But I do like a lot of what they got going on. I like Gus Bradley. I like some of the guys they got on defense. Definitely been a big fan of Denard for obvious reasons. And he's, since he's been starting, he's looked really good. And they still have a lot of ground to cover to get to where they're trying to go. And Andrew Luck, I mean, to sum up what I think this game is going to be, Andrew Luck is just going to torch the secondary.
Yeah,
so
basically.
It's hard to call the Jags in an upset here. So I'm going to go with the Colts. But I wouldn't be surprised if they maybe kept it close, at least for the first half, potentially.
Cincinnati Bengals are at the Houston Texans. You know, I think the Cincinnati Bengals can win this game. Giovanni Bernard's probably going to be back. He might not be he might be, you know, not the lead back, more of a third down and passing down back. Tackle Andre Smith is also going to be back, which is going to help. They have a very good pass-protecting offensive line this year, and they're going to need it, obviously, with J.J. Watt and probably Jadeveon Clowney, and, of course, Brian Cushing and the rest of that Houston front. This all depends on whether pressure can get to Andy Dalton and it can get inside Andy Dalton's head. If they can stop Andy Dalton, Houston can win. If they can't stop Andy Dalton, Houston will lose. I think that Andy Dalton's actually going to have a good game on the road in Houston, which is a tough place, has historically been a tough place, tough team. I'm going to go with the Bengals, but there's a lot of ifs.
I'll be the first to admit the Texans have been a bit better than I expected them to be this year.
I liked Ryan Mallett last week a lot.
And Mallett definitely looked good in his first start. But I don't know. I have that feeling like we're in that part of the season where, you know, the Bengals, I expected them to beat the Saints last week in New Orleans, and they did. I kind of am expecting them to go into Houston and win. I feel like we're at that part of the season where the Bengals is taking care of business against teams that aren't as good as they are. And then when and we'll just have to see how they do when they get into the big matchup against the better opponents.
Yeah, they got the Broncos coming up near the end of the season, so
right.
It's going to be something
like that one. That's a whole other story.
That's a whole other story. So you're going to go with the Bengals as well?
I'm going with the Bengals as well. Yes.
Game we talked about in the first half, the New York Jets at the Buffalo Bills, currently scheduled for 1 p.m. Eastern at Ralph Wilson Stadium. That whether or not that's actually going to come to pass, it's still yet to be determined. Either way, whether this game is played in Buffalo, in Toronto,
on Sunday, on Monday,
in Florida, in Japan, I don't care. Buffalo Bills are going to win this game. They got a lot going on for them. The Jets are the Jets, and I just don't see them going at or to a place, whether Buffalo, Toronto, or whatever, and winning this game.
Yeah, the Jets are the Jets. You're right about that. I can see them maybe, without looking at their schedule, I can see them maybe winning another couple games this year, but they're firmly established as the lower tier of the league this year. Buffalo's looked to be a decent team, and they've won some decent games. They should be hard to beat at home, again, regardless of where they are.
Regardless of what home technically means.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, I'm gonna go with the Bills as well.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are at the Chicago Bears. Chicago got a must win last week.
First home win for the Bears.
A must win when it comes to Mark Trestman's job security, at least for one more week or till the end of the season. I think Chicago can beat Tampa Bay. I mean, okay, Mike Evans is really coming on, and the Bears are going to have to try to find some sort of answer for him. But I don't feel all too great about Josh McCown coming back into Chicago and doing some sort of magical thing. I think it's going to be ugly. Last week's game was ugly. Every game the Bears have played this year has just been super ugly. But I think that they can win against Tampa Bay. I don't like Tampa Bay. They're just not that great this year. Mike Evans is fabulous, but...
Yeah, the Tampa's just bad this year. Regardless of their win last week, I think at least half of that was RG3 and or Washington just being worse. It's interesting. I think this is a good story for the media. You know, Lovey and Josh McCown and going back to Chicago and how's this all going to work out.
There's a lot of storylines here.
The emergence of Mike Evans, if you will. You know, sure, he had a big game last week.
He's been having big games.
And Chicago is certainly not the type of defense to be able to lock that down. But I don't know.
Lovey doesn't have the type of defense to lock down a guy like Marshall and Jeffrey, and you know what I mean? So.
Tampa's just underwhelming this year. Mm-hmm. The Bears finally got their first home win. They got that feeling back. I think they're going to keep it going here.
Next up, a very big matchup in the NFC West. The Arizona Cardinals travel to Seattle to take on the Seahawks.
Oh, yeah.
Seattle isn't a tough place to play as much as it was the past couple of years. Obviously, you know, Arizona with only one loss on the season, they have a three-game advantage over the Seattle Seahawks, who are, of course, the defending Super Bowl champions. I think, you know, Bruce Arians got this team going right now. I think that Arizona is way more than capable of going into Seattle and getting this win. With Drew Stanton at quarterback, I think they can do it. I am going with the Cardinals.
Wow.
They got to win this game if they're going to be any good, and I think they're any good. They're 9-1 for a reason.
I think they're any good regardless if they win this game on Sunday. I think that Seattle is at home and needs this game more. And as good as I think the Cardinals are this year, I still don't think they're as good as Seattle. And I think that Seattle in a divisional game at home is just too much to deal with. And I'm going with the Seahawks in this game.
All right.
Hey, that one had timed well.
Next up, St. Louis Rams are at the San Diego Chargers. I can smell some upset here. I can smell some St. Louis win, but I'm going with the San Diego Chargers. Philip Rivers got banged up a little bit last week, and they got out of that Oakland game with a win, though. I think that we'll see something kind of similar this week out of San Diego. I would feel maybe a little bit less certain about the San Diego Chargers being my pick in this game if this game was in St. Louis, but I like it a lot more with it being in San Diego.
Yeah, this one has really got me torn. San Diego is probably the better team, and they're at home, and it should be pretty cut and dry, but they've They have been playing really well lately over the last couple weeks.
And yeah, they're not playing not to the same level as earlier in the season.
Right, and it's and not just the stinker that that Rivers laid in Miami. Even last week they struggled over that Oakland team, and that was at home. And this St. Louis team is sneaky good. Sean Hill's going to be the quarterback again, and which means you're not going to get a lot of wow, but you're going to get a lot of efficiency.
No, he's a good caretaker.
I think this is a really tough, sneaky tough game for San Diego.
Sure.
And potentially they could be caught slipping here. I'll go with the upset just because I'm feeling, you know, feeling a little lucky. I don't know.
Okay. Next up, Miami Dolphins at the Denver Broncos. We saw the Denver Broncos get manhandled by the St. Louis Rams last week. They had the perfect game plan. Looks like somebody had been studying the Super Bowl Seahawks performance to find ways how to shut down Peyton Manning.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it did not help matters much for Peyton Manning with Emmanuel Sanders exiting the game with a concussion. Of course, Julius Thomas having an ankle injury. That depleted receiving core will have to take on a very tough Miami Dolphins attacking front. But this game's in Denver. Peyton Manning is the consummate competitor. He's probably stewing angry, and you don't like Peyton Manning when he's angry. So I like Denver to win this game, but I'll tell you right now, if this game was in Miami, I'd be picking the Dolphins 100%. But
yeah, this would be a whole other story if this game were in Miami.
Oh, absolutely, it would be the repeat of the Rams game, in my opinion.
I think the
Denver location helps.
I don't even know how I would pick it if it were in Miami, but regardless, it's not. This is Peyton Manning coming home after two road losses. I just don't see any way that they're going to lose three in a row with that third one being at home.
The imploding Washington football team is at the San Francisco 49ers. And Alex Smith, of course, as we know, is back. You got to go with the Niners here. I don't know what's going on. It seems like a bunch of infighting, back-talking, backstabbing, lies, deceit, off the record, on the record. Coaches calling out quarterbacks calling out teammates swearing that they're not calling anybody out. It's a nightmare. San Francisco.
I thought
there was dysfunction with Harbaugh. Jeez.
Yeah, right? I mean, we're also getting to, speaking of that point of the season, we're getting that point of the season where San Francisco is starting to put it together.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen them with two straight road wins, hard-fought, good victories that they had against New Orleans and New York over the last two, the Giants over the last 2 weeks. And so they get to go home now and play this mess of a team that Washington is right now. So, I don't see how this works out for Washington at all.
Surprise, surprise. The Sunday night game features two teams from the NFC East. Primetime division. We've got the Dallas Cowboys.
Wait, who's Dallas playing?
I don't know. We've got the Dallas Cowboys,
and they are
at the New York Giants.
Ooh.
I like Dallas here. I don't trust the New York Giants as far as I can throw them, and I can't throw them that far because you pile up 53 guys on a pro football team's roster. I'm not going to be able to pick them up, let alone throw them. I'm going with the Dallas Cowboys. I think the Cowboys can travel well for a primetime game in the division here. This is a much better roster top to bottom.
Yeah,
Eli. Oh.
God, yeah, that's the thing. Is the Giants, man, it's, you know, this still goes back to it's NFC East and it's tough to call. You know
sure,
what I mean?
Of
and
course.
It's
of course.
In New York. The Giants, I don't think they're as bad as they seem right now. They fought hard last week and just lost a tough game. Eli turned the ball over like crazy. That certainly didn't help. But that's what I'm saying. If you cut that down, if, you know, Rashad Jennings gets running well and Odell Beckham's looked pretty good this year, certainly as a rookie. There's things that they could get things going well there eventually if they execute well. You know what I mean?
Sure.
That's easy to say. But Dallas is tough. You know, Dallas is real tough. They're coming off a bye. I guess I have to go with the Cowboys here just because they certainly seem like the stronger team, and they're coming off a bye. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Giants did one of those weird Giant things where it's like, oh, they're going to be good this week.
Right. And finally, Monday Night Football. The New Orleans Saints host the Baltimore Ravens. This is a third home game in a row for the New Orleans Saints. Their first two losses, uncharacteristic losses, in fact, because they went undefeated at home last season. But this is not your 2013 Saints. This is not your 2013 NFC South. This is a terrible division right now where somebody, I wouldn't be, 6-10 could end up winning this stupid division. That being said, I'm going with New Orleans because I just cannot see this team losing three straight games at home. What's going to dictate this is going to be Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco, last time he was in New Orleans, best game of his career. So maybe he channels that. Or maybe he sucks. Because Joe Flacco can do either of these two things.
True.
I'm not terribly worried about Jimmy Graham. The Ravens are extremely good against tight ends. About 46 yards they're averaging to a tight end. The Bengals found effective ways to shut him down last week. He's a little banged up, but still. There are ways Baltimore can win this game. I'm going to New Orleans because I can't see the Saints losing three straight at home. I just can't.
You know, okay. Well, this is the last game. I'll just finish this out
here. Sure.
Untimed. This is another one. It's like, how can the Saints lose? How can the Saints lose again?
How can
three
they lose
times in a row
again?
At home?
They can't.
They can't. They're a better team than that, right?
Right, you'd think.
Well, this is Baltimore, and Baltimore's probably the best of the three that they've played in these three games.
Last week was pretty bad.
They're as good. Let's put it this way: they're as good as the other two teams that they just lost to. They should be. Baltimore should be the better team here, based on what we've seen this season out of both these teams. The Baltimore's coming off of a bye. There's plenty of reasons to like Baltimore. But I think if you put it in the context of the third straight home game, they're more than desperate at this point. They kind of have to win this game. The motivation is there. That I guess I'm going to go with them.
Yeah,
sold. But
if I'm not sold either, and if they don't win this game, then that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Three straight losses at home for the Saints. I'm sorry, your divisional champions are the 6-10 Atlanta Falcons. so that does it for our minute picks for Week 12.
Hey, what about the 6-9-1 Panthers?
Listen, Cam Newton. All right, Cam Newton's Twitter account got hacked this week, guys. You want to know why? Because his Twitter password was Cam Newton 1, aka his first name, his last name, and his jersey number. And then he was like, "Oh, my bad. I didn't know that you had to have a more complicated password than
that." I know that people hacked Twitter accounts anywhere. Yeah.
Cam Newton 1. Was Cam Newton 1's password.
Does anybody know where Cam Newton banks?
Right? Yeah, his ATM pin is 11111. So you know, I don't know about those Panthers this year.
So those were the picks.
And
another week in the books here with our picks. We didn't publicly announce them last week.
And it's good that we didn't, because we both would have been horrible.
Yeah, I had a couple decent calls last week. I didn't do great, obviously, because it was a rough week to call games. It was a underdog kind of Sunday. It was a good better Sunday if you're a better type. But yeah, I'm not overly upset that I didn't get a chance to say my picks last week. But
well,
anyway.
Well, that wraps up our picks for this week, though.
Yep.
So enjoy. I hope you were entertained by them, at least. We're going to take a break, and then we'll come back to send you on home here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. And we're back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. And as is customary around these parts, before we let you go, we're going to read you a couple of facts here from the Little Giant Book of Football Facts, which is apparently includes plenty of pigskin stories, stats, and super feats. Ready, set, hike, according to the cover.
Can I request some pigskin stories?
They're not really – there are a few stories in here, but they're not very long stories. So without further ado, I'm going to read you seven edifying facts about football and football history. And as always, be sure to hit either myself or Brian up on Twitter if any of these facts, quote-unquote facts, end up being proven to be untrue, because there are false facts.
Yeah,
this book was 99 cents.
If anything sounds weird, go ahead and look it up, and if it's wrong, let us know.
Let us know. All right, starting with our first one.
This wasn't an expensive book.
Also, y'all, just one thing. When I say QB or RB, that's because it says QB in the book. And when I say quarterback, it's because it spells out the word, because often it'll jump back and forth on the same page, okay? Yeah. QB Jim Everett of the New Orleans Saints passed for 3,970 yards during the 1995 NFL season. Not a bad year for Mr. Everett. The Buffalo Bills were an original member of the American Football League and became part of the NFL in 1970.
Along with a lot of those.
Along with other teams. O.J. Simpson of USC was named the number one pick in the 1969 NFL draft when he was selected by the Buffalo Bills. The first man to coach the Cincinnati Bengals was football innovator Paul Brown. Brown assumed the gridiron reins of the Bengals when Cincinnati joined the NFL in 1968. The team colors of the Cincinnati Bengals are black, orange, and white. The first head coach of the Denver Broncos was Frank Filchok, who guided the team in 1960. And finally, when the Denver Broncos first became a member team of the NFL in 1970, the Broncos won only 5 of 14 games with one tie. Actually, one tie is in parentheses, but I'm sure that's what they meant. So those are our facts. Just throw that book on the floor. Those are our amusing, entertaining, and eye-popping NFL facts.
You just leave it there on the floor
for this week's episode. So that therefore concludes this week's episode of the F-Ball NFL podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst, AFC North writer at BleacherReport.com. You can go to BleacherReport.com. You can do some Googling. You could download the TeamStream app to find all of my articles daily written about the AFC North. You could also like my Facebook page, which has all of my articles usually linked in a timely manner. Sometimes I forget. I think that is facebook.com/ahangst. That's A-H-A-N-G-S-T NFL. I'm pretty sure. I also write for Pro Football Focus Fantasy. You can find my columns there every week. Sign up for Pro Football Focus Fantasy Gold to read my weekly waiver wire deep league gem column. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at @FBall_Andrea. That's FBALL_Andrea.
And I'm Brian, of course, the co-host and producer of this podcast. And I can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's @BFAT65.
All right. Well, that just about does it then for our week 12 edition of the F-Ball NFL podcast. We'll be back next week. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about why the NFC South has been struggling so much, or perhaps the drama in Washington. There are so many things to talk about. And, of course, all the crazy action that should be occurring this week, this weekend in the National Football League.
Well, we'll get everybody ready for those Thanksgiving slate.
Yes, get everybody ready for Thanksgiving, which is, you know, food holidays are always fun.
We'll see how drunk everybody is next Wednesday when we get done making the podcast.
Sounds good. So until then, thanks for listening. Enjoy the games this week, and we'll be back next Wednesday evening with the F-Ball NFL podcast.
Later.
Peace. Jack, 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 Jack.